He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you?
Hi folks, this is Bob Main, your host of today's survival show, and thank you for tuning into yet another episode, episode 33, and we help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms. That's what we're all about. We're about practical survival skills. We make survival simple, not extreme. And our goal here at today's survival show is to talk about ways that you can thrive today so that you can survive tomorrow. And what I mean is really literally thriving today, doing things in a little bit of a different way so that you set yourself up so that if something bad happens, you have a strong response. You can come at it from a position of strength rather than a position of weakness. And even if something doesn't happen to go wrong, at least what you're doing is you're making your life a little bit better today because of what you're doing. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later. That's kind of a part of today's show. So thank you for tuning in. If you are a first-time listener, I want to welcome you and thank you for tuning in and let you know you have tuned in to A Voice of Reason in a Chaotic World. And I have the pleasure today of bringing episode 33 to you while I'm driving down Interstate 35 in Texas. I'm about an hour south of Dallas going to San Antonio on a business trip, so figured I'd take a little bit of windshield time here and talk to you about a couple of interesting topics. The two major topics of this episode is, number one, we're going to spend the first half of the show, I'll spend the first half of this show, talking about Shoestring Survivalism. It's a book by Andy James, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that and some of the concepts in it and how I think it applies to today. And then the other half of the show is going to be dedicated to SMART survival goal setting. If you don't have goals, if you don't know where you're going, you're probably going to end up somewhere else. It's pretty much as simple as that. So that's what we're going to talk about. I want to get a couple of announcements out of the way, though, before we continue. We can be found on the web at www.todayssurvival.com. That might be how you found this show in the first place, but if not, or if you want to read some of the other resources, there's quite a few pages that we have on our blog. There's a self-defense page. There's a government secrets page. I haven't had a chance to talk a little bit or talk too much about that on these shows, but check out the government secrets page. Every time I find something that I think either the media or the government is hiding from us, I try to expose them and put it on that page. And you know, it's hard to keep up with all of the news out there, so check that out. You might see some things on there that your government's trying to sneak by you that maybe you didn't know about. Also, we've got a humor page on the blog, so I think you'll find some pretty good resources. And, of course, I want to talk about our forum as well. That's another part of the announcements. I've got about 147 or 148 fairly active members on the forum. And if you have not become a part of that community, I want to invite you to do that. While you're on that blog page at todayssurvival.com, just click the forum tab. It'll take you right where you need to go to join that. In fact, I'm going to talk about couple of forum members today and some of the posts that they've put up there recently. And the other announcement that I want to make is, don't forget about our Survival Activists Club. I started that a little bit less than a couple weeks ago. Become a survival activist. Join the SAC Club. Today's Survival Show SAC Club. And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time. I don't want to burn up a lot of this show talking about that. But just go to the forum or go to the blog page and click Survival Activist. It's important that we become active members of our community and active members of our government as well. That's what, in the United States, that's what the Founding Fathers wanted us to be, was active in our government. And that's the way they set it up. And too many people, I think, are asleep and not paying attention to what to some of the idiot policies that our government is trying to ram down our throat. And I'm not taking sides here. I'm not going to side with the conservatives or the liberals or the people in between, because all of them have a lot of idiot things going on. So become a Survival Activist Club member and let the people that are running your show and running your country know how you feel. And so with that said, that pretty much ends the announcements that I wanted to cover. Let's dive right into the main topic. Let's first of all talk about shoestring survivalism. It's a book that's out by an author named Andy James. Andy's a U.S. Army veteran, a law enforcement officer, and of course a lifelong survivalist who lives in the Pacific Northwest in the United States. And there was an interview done with Andy not too long ago about his book, Shoestring Survivalism, and even just the interview gives some really good insights as to what we all need to do today. I learned something just by reading the interview, and even if you're an experienced survival-minded person, if you haven't read the book, get it. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of the ideas that came that Andy talked about during that interview, and see if some of this even makes sense. And especially if you're new into becoming more self-sufficient and more prepared, I think you're going to get a lot from this. And I want to preface this by saying this. There's a lot of events out there, folks, that are threats to us. Not just natural disasters. And I know some of you listening to this show, you live in areas where natural disasters could be something that could easily, if it hasn't already threatened you, it could easily. Let's not forget about acts of terrorism. Let's not forget about things like the long-term financial crisis. That's going to affect all of us. That's worldwide. You know, let's not forget what our government is doing. And even, you know, for those of you, I have international listeners who listen to this show. Even what the United States is doing, the reckless fiscal policy of our country, can have an effect on you and your country as well. So there's a lot of things that can affect us, and I've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. It's impossible for me to know where everybody listening to this show lives. It's important for you to understand what threats can occur in your area, locally, within your neighborhood, within your county, within your state, and also you need to look at international threats. And so really, I think the timing couldn't be better for a subject like this to talk about shoestring survivalism, because I think right now, probably more so than ever, we have the greatest chance of some type of a disaster hitting us. And I think it's going to be sooner than later. I try to keep this show practical, and I try not to get involved in a lot of conspiracy theories. You know, I've been reading a lot lately about things that can go wrong, and if I wanted to, I could do a complete show on nothing but conspiracy theories and talk about all the stuff that could go wrong. I don't want to make it seem like I wear a tinfoil hat, and I would urge you not to have a tinfoil hat on your head and make sure that you're not thinking of all the whacked out stuff. Let's try to keep this practical. But as we do that, as we keep it practical, I think that you're going to find some ideas that even if you are preparing for, let's say, a huge calamity, I think you're going to get a lot from this to help you get ready for that. And so let's dive right into it. Let me share some ideas that I came up with from this interview with Andy James, the author of Shoestring Survivalism. The person that was interviewing him asked him, she started off with a question that said that there had been a lot of books that were out there that were written on disaster preparation, and that they noticed that Andy's basic angle that he came at this with was a financial angle, which is why he called it shoestring, operating on a shoestring budget, survivalism. And the interviewer asked him, why did he come at it from that angle? And he says, well, you know, he said he'd like to be able to say that it was purely out of wanting to help folks in their preparedness. But he admitted that the truth was that it was really a pragmatic decision on his own part. And he said that years ago, as a young man starting a family, and this is what I thought was neat, because a lot of us, including me, have found ourselves in this position. He was a young guy starting a family, and he realized that it was probably more critical for those that were living paycheck to paycheck to get involved in shoestring survivalism rather than those who were affluent. Although, as I mentioned in one of my other episodes, you got a lot of affluent people, a lot of wealthy people that by nature and by habit, they live like a survivalist because that's what helps them get wealthy. But he said that he realized that the folks that were living paycheck to paycheck or on a fixed income, they were the ones that needed the most. And you know, there's an old saying about training, and there's an old saying about bettering your life. It's those who need it the most that seem to not do it. When I used to work for Tom Hopkins, we used to get very frustrated with that because we would meet all kinds of people that needed our training, whether it was sales training, whether it was motivational training, or even personal development. Those who needed it the most, those were the greatest failures. It was amazing. The people who were the greatest failures in their lives were the ones that just didn't embrace change. They didn't embrace the concept of training. And Andy said, you know, later as he advanced in life, he realized that in addition to just paying the bills, he wanted to enjoy life a little. You know, he wanted to be able to go out to restaurants, have a good meal, take a vacation, you know, and he still had things to pay for, like we've all got, like I've got, I'm facing, you know, a kid's college fund, you know, keeping my retirement accounts funded, dental bills, medical bills, which I've been hit with a lot lately. And so he felt that approaching survivalism on a shoestring concept allowed him to cover those concerns, keep all that stuff funded, and also prepare for disasters that might come his way while he was on a budget. And he said that one of the things that he wanted to do was to show people how to do it and to prove that it could be done on a tight budget. And so one of his points that he makes that I thought was the best, where he said that a lot of planning and a lot of survival is free. And you've heard me talk about this a lot. A lot of stuff that you can do is free. Things like understanding what the hazards are in your area first. All right, and all you got to do is talk to people. All you have to do is basically, whatever area you live in, just get on the internet and Google it. You know, if you are one of those people that you've had your head stuck in the sand, and you say, hey, well, okay, you know, I think that I probably need to start getting involved in some of this survival stuff, and maybe something has hit you across the head and woken you up, but you might be saying to yourself, well, gee, you know, what could happen in my area? Look it up. I guarantee you, if you get on the internet and you type in your geographical area and potential disasters, you're going to come up with quite a few of them. That's free to do. Inventorying. Taking an inventory of what you have on hand in your house already and setting goals. That's free. And let me go ahead and talk about one of our forum members, M. Barnattle. You need to get on our forum and you need to check out some of the posts recently by M. Barnattle. M-B-A-R-N-A-T-L. Check out some of the inventory posts that he's put on there about inventorying your house. There's a software program that he suggested that I just recently downloaded. I downloaded a trial of it called My Ice Plan, ICE, in case of emergency. And I'm doing a 30-day trial right now of My Ice Plan. And if you go to the forum, and I'll also put a link in the show notes about it, I would urge everybody who's listening to this program, if you want to take an inventory of what you have, and there's all kinds of reasons for taking an inventory of what you've got in your house already. There's insurance reasons for doing so. There's if you have a loss, you can obviously, you know what you've got, you know the value of it, it's easier to make a claim. But also, when you're considering, okay, what do I have to do to prepare? You'd be amazed that you'll have some stuff already on hand, and you'd be amazed that there's some things that maybe you didn't consider was a survival tool, but now as you study the concept of modern survivalism, you realize that there's different ways you can use the items that you already have, but you have to know what you've got. I'll tell you the other good benefit of taking an inventory of what you got in your house already, it's going to force you to declutter. And I bet there's a lot of us that are listening to this show right now, including me, who still have a little bit too much clutter in the homes that we live in. My ICE plan, that software, is not only going to help you figure out what you've got, but it's also going to help you figure out what you don't need. That's free to do. And even the software is free to try for 30 days, and then it's $25 if you want to buy it. I'm fairly sure I'm going to buy it, but I'm going to use their 30-day trial. I'm the kind of person who likes to try before I buy, so that's what I'm going to do. But Andy talks about some of these things that you can do that cost almost nothing. Going to the library and getting books, getting all different kinds of books on self-sufficiency, on farming, on growing food. Even doing things like getting on our forum and either in quite a few other survival forums out there, and just reading the posts that people put out there on what they're doing in their own experience. That's free. So the fact that you're even listening to this podcast, which I don't charge you for, that's a big step in the right direction. And as I mentioned, get involved in all the other internet forums that you can get involved in. Here's a goal that I would like you to learn to set. In fact, we're going to talk about smart survival goals in the second half of this program. But set a goal of about 30 to 90 minutes per week. If you just start there, start with 30 to 90 minutes per week. And even if you are an experienced prepper, but maybe you want to refresh your mind on some things, or you want to be able to gain a different perspective on maybe one particular subject. All right, maybe you want to learn how to improve your garden, for example. Just devote 30 to 90 minutes per week. What can you cut out of your life in terms of time? And I bet you, if you sit and think about it, all of us have 30 to 90 minutes per week. Okay, one less football game every weekend, folks, and spending that even half that football game. All right, all you got to do is record the first half of your favorite football game. That's about 90 minutes, right? And spend that first half while if you do have a DVR, while you're recording it. Jump on today's survival forum, jump on today's survival blog, queue up one of my podcasts, queue up some of the other great podcasts that are out there and some of the other forums, and just start studying and listening and learning. That's free. So just do stuff like that. So time is one of the goals that you have to commit. That's a necessity. Just try, even just 30 minutes a week, you'll be amazed how half an hour a week will change your life. And so Andy James says that preparedness, in his view, is about preserving options for whatever crisis comes about and then having the resources available to you when they're scarce somewhere else. And using the stockpiled items that you have, and this is what I like, this is what's key, using the stockpile items that you have to shift money and to shift worry to other areas. And he said that to him, it matters a lot less what causes the problem than it is what you've done to prepare for it. So whether the disaster is a financial disaster, or it's a natural disaster, or it's a man-made crisis like our government's trying real hard to do, whole nother subject, the fact that you've done something to prepare is more important than the actual event itself. You know, and he makes the point that something eventually is going to happen. But how many of you know somebody that's, you know, when you talk to them about survivalism, they still give you this look, this blank stare on their face. And even some of them, I had this happen to me. I had this happen to me a couple weeks ago. Someone said, Bob, what could go wrong? Man, don't you just want to just... don't you just want to pummel them and say, where are you sleeping these days? What kind of a rock have you been under? You know, disasters don't always occur in faraway places with weird names, and they're usually not real dramatic. I mean, losing a job hits right at home. And a lot of times, folks, people don't even know that it's happened to you, but it is a disaster. And having money saved in the bank in case that happens to you, having food stored in case that happens to you, having even some of your some of the ability to produce some of your own energy in a low cost efficient manner, all those will help you even if you lost your job, or if your spouse works and he or she lost their job, and all of a sudden now a half or a third of your income is wiped out. And part of preparedness is planning for a future where nothing, where even if nothing significantly bad happens to you. And this is not a new concept. There's a lot of others out there who talk about that. You know, preparing even if nothing really terribly wrong, nothing really bad happens. You know, this is something that our ancestors have done for many, many years. And it's something that a lot of us have gotten away from. It's not really a new concept, but I think it's something that we all need to get back to. And whatever you do now, it betters your life. And like I said earlier in the show, so that you can respond to a disaster from a position of strength. I mean, this is all about peace of mind. I want you to think about something. I want you to think about the peace of mind that you would have if you could go for, let's say, 90 days without a grocery bill. Now just think about that for a minute. All right, I don't know how much you spend on food every month. You know, let's say you don't have the position, you're not in the position to be able to grow all your own food. All right, let's say you still have to buy 90% of your food. Well, what is your grocery bill every month? Multiply that times 3. How good would it feel to know that, well, you might not be eating like a king? You know, your family might not be eating like kings and queens. You know, might not be real gourmet style meals every time, but you're going to survive. You're going to stay well nourished for 3 full months and not have to shell out one thin dime for food. How would that feel? Would that be more comforting? Would it be more comforting for you to know that the money you have in the bank is going to sustain you, it's going to pay your bills for the next 90 days, so in case you do lose your job or your spouse loses your job, you don't have to freak out so bad? Because now you've got at least a 3-month cushion. So Andy's point about shoestring survivalism is that you build your reserves in things like money, investments like bonds, silver, gold, retirement funds, food, marketable goods, and things bit by bit that add up so that you've got that peace of mind in case something happens. Pretty simple concept, but yet it's amazing how many of us don't do that. It's about preserving the options that you have. And I start off every show by saying, helping you harness the power of choice. That's what I mean when I say the power of choice. The options that you have. Preserving all the options that you have at your disposal. Now, you might think, well, this all kind of sounds a little bit overwhelming. And I want to address all of you who might be new to this right now, because I know that there's some of you that are listening to this program that really have never given survivalism too much thought until you've recently started either listening to my show or maybe a couple of others or read some other blogs out there about survival. And, you know, the world events and the events going on in the country right now have spoken to you and probably said, hey, you know, I need to start doing something. By the time I get done with this show, it won't seem quite so overwhelming, because I'm going to give you some ideas on how to start small and how to pick just a few things that you can do that are going to give you some instant peace of mind that are relatively easy and very cost effective. And Andy's philosophy is to find out where you stand right now and decide that if you are going to do survivalism, if you are going to get into this, to do it right. You know, because sometimes the problem is we've got this notion of only doing a little bit of work toward a project and then we quit. Pick 3 or 4 areas that you want to improve your sustainability in. Don't pick 12 all at once. Pick 3 and do them very, very well and set your goals properly, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. Let me make a suggestion of one of them. How about start becoming aware of news events going on? All right? How about watching some independent news shows, or getting on the internet and reading some independent news sites? I think episode number 31, I covered this topic, the mind of an independent thinker. But how about, first of all, becoming aware, getting your head out of the sand and find out what's going on? I mean, that could provide you the nudge to get going. Once you've decided to engage in a survivalism plan, then you got to be able to execute it, and I'm going to talk a little bit about executing it by setting up your goals. But don't just be satisfied with the notion that you're going to practice survivalism. It's not something that you practice, it's a way of life. This is a life change, folks. If you're not ready for a life change, turn this podcast off right now. Get rid of it. All right? Because you're wasting your time listening to me, really. Because what I'm asking you to do is change your life. I'm asking you to take some responsibility to do things different. You know, what I'm asking you to do is to not go insane. Because as we all know, what the definition of insanity is. Insanity is doing the same thing you've always done and expecting to get a different result. So please, I'm serious. I'm 100% serious. If you're not ready to make some changes right now, just go ahead and shut this off and delete it from your iPod or your MP3 player or your computer, because it's not going to be of any good to you or any use to you at all. So don't just practice it. Get serious about it. Now, plan for whom you're going to need resources for, and decide what you want to have on hand in terms of things like water, food, and money for a period of time. So, let's start with a small period of time. Here's the first tip I want to give you on goal setting, is make it an attainable goal. One of the problems that a lot of us get into is not making our goals attainable at first. It's little by little. It's baby steps. It's very much like the Dave Ramsey Total Money Makeover financial plan. You got to take baby steps first. You have to pay off small debts first and start building a track record of success. And then it just snowballs. Well, survivalism is the same thing. It just kind of snowballs. So here's a suggestion. Why don't you first of all start with a plan to build up 7 days' worth of food. All right, just something easy. A week's worth of food. It'll probably take you 30 minutes to sit down and write a list, make a list of what you and your family eat in 1 week. All right, just make a list of what you eat in a week. Just a brief list, all right? You don't have to get super detailed or anything, but just, you know, in generalities, write down what you eat. And figure out how to gather up the money, or if you're growing some of your own food, to be able to store that, sock that away. And if you want some food storage techniques, our forum has got quite a few people that have posted ideas on there right now about food storage techniques. All you got to do is start with a Rubbermaid a container. And even if you want to just start putting some canned food and some boxed food away, I mean, that might not be the healthiest stuff, but, you know, it's going to keep you alive. It's going to sustain you if there's some kind of a disaster and crisis and you can't get to a grocery store for a week to buy food. That is a good place to start, just right there, 7 days. I think just about anybody can build up enough food for 7 days. Then once you've got 7 days, then go for 14. And then once you've got 14, then go for 30. And then 30, turn it into 60, and so on. I think you get the picture. Then do the same thing with water. Build up a week's worth of fresh water. And then, you know, maybe 2 weeks worth, and then 30 days. Small goals, but start building upon them. And when you do that, you're not going to be one of those people on CNN or Fox after a disaster who's begging for water and complaining that, you know, you haven't had anything to eat in a couple of days. Now, the next point I want to make, another question that was asked of Andy about his book, is the interviewer asked him how to categorize the typical survivalist. And, you know, I've covered this myself before, what I think the makeup is of survivalists. But Andy gave a pretty good response. He said, you know, the range of survivalists include everything from shoebox survivalists, like a single mother and a young son who could literally take their whole food stockpile and put it into a shoebox. But they start building from there, and it can range all the way up to, you know, wealthy people, doctors and so forth, that have land. They got solar power. They've got stores of food. They got their own well. They've got plenty of generators, and they got enough capacity to supply several families. And then he says you have a whole bunch of people in between, and that's where he feels the vast majority of survivalists fall, is somewhere in between those. They've got some food. They got some water. You know, they got 5 gallons or so socked away, 10 gallons. They got a few firearms. They got a little bit of ammunition, and they have a little bit of means to provide a little bit of extra heat and a little bit light in their homes in case there's a disaster and there's no power. But they're in between. They're not a shoebox survivalist, but they're not, you know, fully sustainable either. And he also said a lot of folks, they don't even know that they're survivalists, but because they happen to live in an area where it's prone to disasters like hurricanes or floods or earthquakes, they've actually taken the advice of FEMA and the Red Cross, and they've already started to put together some emergency supplies and communications and so forth already, just because they want to be prepared the next time disaster hits. Then they may not call themselves a survivalist because there's a stigma, right? We're a bunch of wackos, aren't we? Ugh, boy, that just drives me crazy when people start talking about us as wackos, because we're common sense people. And I think that if more people were to start to embrace survivalism in a positive, more mainstream way, I really think we could solve a lot of the problems that we have. And, you know, it's really too bad. Part of my goal, part of my quest in doing this show is I want to spread this message of being prepared to more people. The less dependent we can be on Uncle Sam, the less dependent we can be on Big Brother. I think we're all starting to see now that being dependent on systems of delivery and being dependent on governments to provide us with our sustainability in a disaster or even just in everyday life is not a good thing. I think we're all starting to see that now. I think people are starting to wake up. I'm trying to tap into that and get more and more people to wake up to that fact. And Andy James goes right back to food when the interviewer asks him the question. He says, you know, food is one area in which you can get a surprisingly big bang for your buck. And he's so right about that. You know, he said, for not a lot of money, you can start putting away food. And the good thing about putting away food is that whatever you buy, if you're the person buying food or whatever you're growing even, okay, you're paying today's prices for it. If it goes up later, you've already saved money. See, no disasters happened, but you've already saved money because you bought it at today's prices. The price just went up. Now you've made a one-time investment in it at a lower price, and you're already ahead of the game. So, you know, getting enough to prevent starvation in a disaster is pretty cheap. It doesn't cost that. And then once you've got that fundamental covered, okay, you're not going to starve. Now you can start doing things like supplementing it as your budget grows. You can get healthier foods. You can put in vitamins, things like that, to help increase the quality of what you're putting away. And another thing that Andy says, which I really like, is he says, you know, there's some things that you shouldn't scrimp on when you're preparing. You know, for example, like tools. All right, you know, you could get by with some cheap basic screwdrivers and some cheap basic long-nose pliers, but he said sometimes with tools, it's good to invest in some name brand stuff, invest in some good quality. Like if you're going to put together a multi-tool in your bug out bag, get a good one, get a Gerber, get a Leatherman, get something that's of good quality that's going to last and is something you can depend on if it's a disaster that you're in the middle of. You want to be able to depend on these tools. So some things you shouldn't scrimp on because he's an Army veteran. He also talked about Army wool blankets. He said, you know, they're not cheap, but there's a lot of things you can use Army blankets for. He says, not only do they keep you warm, but you can use them for fire suppression and insulation. And then he was asked an interesting question, which I really want to drive this point home. The interviewer asked him, she asked, what are some of the mistakes that people make in terms of preparing? You know, he was asked, do you see things like the guy that spends hundreds of dollars on a new .308 rifle and a whole bunch of ammo and then forgets to spend $3 on a can opener to be able to open up all of his canned food in case the power goes out? And he says, yeah. He says, this definitely happens, and we see this all the time, and I see this all the time. You know, it's funny to meet somebody that calls themselves a survivalist, and they've got a $1,700 rifle, they got a $1,200 pistol, and they got 5,000 rounds of ammo. But then when you look at their food storage, they got four cans of chili, a carton of ramen noodles, and a few jugs of water. Oh, but they're a survivalist. I'm sorry, you can't eat your rifle, you can't eat your expensive pistol, and you can't eat the 6,000 rounds of ammo. And it's a lot more likely that you're going to be feeding and watering and sheltering people than you are going to be shooting them. Especially if you've got family members. Now, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with expensive firearms. I happen to have a few. Nothing wrong with them. But make sure you got everything else covered first. It's much more important probably a lot better strategy if you've got one or two decent quality firearms And, you know, maybe a few hundred rounds of ammo for each, and then start getting all your other preparations in order first before you start expanding your firearms collection. Hard thing for me to say because I'm such a big gun enthusiast. But think about this. From the money that you save on food, water, batteries, stuff like that, you'll eventually be able to get that AR with your fancy EOTech sight on it that you want. Now, he also says don't go overboard. Don't have crates and crates of fancy seltzer water and pallets of fancy freeze-dried food and stuff like that, and then have nothing but pepper spray to defend yourself with. And I tell you, I mentioned this, I think it was the last episode, episode 32, when I talked about the haves and the have-nots. You know, unfortunately, we could easily find ourselves in the situation, and I think we saw this on TV with some of the other recent disasters, that once people figure out that you are one of the haves, once they figure out that you've got a stockpile of food and you have a stockpile of water, it's just human nature. They're going to come after it. So you have to achieve that balance in your preparations. And another good question that Andy was asked, the interviewer asked him about low-key survivalism. And I want to talk a little bit about that because he makes a really, really good point. You know, he said that a low-key approach to survival means that that there are very few people who know that you engage in a significant level of preparedness. And he says, suppose that everybody in your neighborhood knows that you stockpile food. And he said, if you save something that's currently not scarce right now, you're probably just going to be, you know, seen as an odd person, that you're a funny duck. They're going to think, that person's weird. You know, we can get all kinds of that right now. It's not scarce. But look at this wacko. He's stocking it up. But if you stockpile items, if the items that you have stockpiled then become scarce later, other people are going to start seeing you as part of the problem. All right, they're going to say, "Well, you know, this guy's now he's part of the problem." And if this item becomes, if what you're stocking up becomes really, really scarce, now you're one of the bastards that knew this was all coming, and now you might be one of these that created the problem. And here is the big enchilada that he talks about. He says, "You know, the final stage is that people start exploiting you." You know, they start seeing you not only as the source of their misery, but now you are, because you have stuff, now you're a resource to be exploited. You know, think about that. Some people, after when there's a disaster, they go through a process of rationalization, and they feel like they're justified in attacking you and taking the items from you because of the circumstances that are at hand. And Andy talks about a true incident that happened to him. This is neat. He calls it firewood and fences. He said quite a few years ago, his father-in-law had a bunch of firewood delivered to his house right before a huge blackout in the area. And the firewood was stacked up in his carport, which was visible from the street out front. And he said a neighbor came by pleading for his sick wife and a cold child, and he asked if he could have some firewood. And Andy said his father-in-law obliged and provided the firewood. And this whole thing started off slow. The person would come by every once in a while asking for some more firewood, but all of a sudden, and this is what happens in a disaster, folks. Here we go. All of a sudden, he said a feeding frenzy started. And then somebody else, another neighbor, would come by and ask for some firewood. And then another. And then, instead of coming by and asking, they came by and started demanding. See, this is what's going to happen. Once people realize that you have, at first they're going to be asking you to help. Then they're going to be demanding you to help them. They're going to say, "You have to help me." He said, then his father-in-law would come home, and he'd find people he didn't even know taking the firewood away as if it was their right to have it. He said in a short period of time, people went from being grateful to being resentful. And he said soon his father's stockpile of wood was gone. Now he said if the firewood would have been stacked on the other end of the fence, where people couldn't see it, in a more low-key manner, a lot of this could have been avoided. And see, the problem we have, folks, is we now live in an age of entitlement. And the thing you have to ask yourself when you're preparing is, do you want to be everybody else's resource? So low-key survivalism is not a bad idea. Now, you know, here I am doing podcasts and got a website going and a forum going and everything and telling a lot of people what I'm doing, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it, but I'm not going to flaunt it, and I wouldn't suggest that you do either. You know, try the best you can. It's kind of like if you have wealth. Don't flaunt it. Don't let people know that you have it. Same thing with whatever you're stockpiling, whatever you're preparing, whatever you're putting away. Try to be as low-key about it, because otherwise you're going to start to foster that sense of entitlement in people when a disaster happens, and then that becomes another disaster after the original disaster. You see, the second disaster occurs when people think that they're entitled to what you have, and that's when you better have the means of defending your property. That's where your firearms come into play, right there. That's kind of a dark side of survivalism, but I guess it's reality, isn't it? You know, unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's easier and it's cheaper for them to write down your name and address and remember what you've told them that you have and that you've got 6 months' worth of food. It's easier for them to do that than to stockpile it themselves. They're going to think, well, you know, hey, I know Bob's got it. I can just raid his place if something happens. Okay, so don't forget about keeping it as low key as you can. So, good review on Andy's book, and mine's on order, and I can't wait to get it and start devouring it. So now let's talk about the second subject that I wanted to get into, which is smart survival goals. You do need to set goals, folks. It's like anything else. I mean, it's like if you're trying to lose weight, you know, you got to set some very measurable and attainable and specific goals. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. You realize that the average person in the world today spends more time planning the details of a 2-week vacation than they do planning the details of their life? It's sad, but it's true. So let's talk about the 5 areas that you need to focus on, and the 5 characteristics of what your goals should be, and the way that you should structure your goals so that they're attainable. I'm going to talk about the first 2 on this show, and in the next episode, I'll talk about the last 3. First of all, they have to be specific. That's number 1. Your goal has to be specific. Don't be vague. Don't be ambiguous about your goals. Ambiguous goals produce ambiguous results. When we're specific, we harness the power to set the forces into action that empower us to achieve the goal. So, for example, if food storage is one of your specific goals and you don't have any now, like I mentioned, set that 7-day or 2-week goal. Now you've specified it. You've put a quantity to it. If first aid kit, if building a kit is one of your goals, build a basic one first. Don't try to build a huge, big, advanced, elaborate first aid kit first. Put together a basic one first. And if you want to know what should go into a basic first aid kit, I don't have time to discuss it on this show. Well, I might do another show on that, but you can jump on our forum and just hit the search function for first aid kits. There's some good postings on there already about what should just be, and you should have one for each vehicle. Just a basic one first, just something simple, not elaborate, but that's your specific goal. And then the next trait that your goal should have is it should be measurable. So the S in smart survival goal planning, the S stands for being specific. The M stands for measurable. Always make goals that you can actually measure. And you know, I talked earlier about my ICE plan, in case of an emergency plan. You know, let's say decluttering your home is one of your goals. All right, just make it measurable. You know, start with a specific room in your house. All right, if you have a spare bedroom that's cluttered, all right, well, there's how you're going to measure it. You're going to say to yourself, all right, well, the first goal I'm going to have, it's going to be specific. I'm going to pick a room, and I'm going to take out about 10% of what's in this room. All right, so now you've been specific. You've picked out a room, and now you said, okay, I'm going to reduce its contents by 10%. Surely there's 10% of this stuff that I probably don't need, that I probably haven't touched in a year, that I could care less if I didn't have anymore, and I'm going to take out that 10%, and I'm going to donate it. I'm going to give it away. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to sell it in a garage sale or sell it on eBay, and I'm going to build up some money for my emergency fund. And there you go. There's another goal. Let's say you want to build up an emergency financial fund. Okay, you got to have $1,000 or $2,000 in the bank as an emergency fund. Well, maybe let's say you're sitting at $400 right now. That's all you got in your emergency fund. All right, so you specified it. You said, okay, I'm going to build my emergency fund. I got $400. Now make it measurable. All right, I'm going to go from $400 to $700. I'm going to increase it by $300. I'm going to declutter my house. I'm going to put some stuff on eBay, and I'm going to have a garage sale. And I'm going to get that $300 in the next 7 days or 10 days or whatever. Now you've made it measurable. See, now you can check back with yourself after those 10 days have passed to see if you've been able to come up with that $300, to see if you've decluttered that room by 10%, to see if you've already built that basic first aid kit. So I don't care what it is, whether it's the number of days food stored, whether it's the number of clutter or the amount of clutter reduced out of a room by a percentage, whether it's a certain amount of debt that you want to pay off, whether it's dollars that you want to save or pounds that you want to save, whatever country you live in, you should be able to see exactly how you're measuring up as you push toward your goal. What would happen if you didn't measure your goals? You would never know which way you were going, or even if you were headed anywhere. So make them specific. And again, like I said, start with three or four of them. Maybe three. And then measure them. Find out where you are first. Before you take someone to where you want them to go, you got to start with where they are first. So if you're helping somebody do this, if you're helping them set goals, find out where they're at. Especially if it's a loved one, if it's a family member, even if you're trying to teach this to your kid, find out where they're at first. Like, for example, with my son. All right, I'm trying to teach him how to set smart goals. He wants to save up some money for a purchase that he wants to make. Purchase that he wants to make is $180. Okay, right now he's got about like $26 in his save envelope. And by the way, if you haven't done this for your kids, I've mentioned this before. If you pay your kids an allowance, or even if they work jobs and they earn money, teach them the three envelope system for kids. They should have three envelopes, three white business envelopes. And what they should do is label those envelopes spend, save, and give. And teach them to save a portion of their money to be spent. I teach my son, okay, you can spend half of what you make. All right? And then the other half is broken down into a give envelope and a save envelope. So you can spend half. So if you earn 20 bucks this week, you can spend 10. You got to save 5 and you have to give away 5. Teaches them good concepts. Okay, so he's got about $26, $27. He's got a lot of saving to do. If he wants, he can make a choice to take some of the money from that spend envelope, and he can transfer it over to the saving envelope. But that's a good, healthy choice for him to learn. Well, we as adults, we can do the same thing. If you've got to put yourself on a three-envelope system, do it. Put yourself on a three-envelope system. Okay, if you pay yourself an allowance, or if your spouse pays you an allowance, don't forget those three. Spend, save, and give. See, I believe in giving too, because I believe that the more that you give, the more you will eventually get back. It's just a personal belief of mine, and you just try me on that. Okay? You try me on that. You try giving away a quarter of what you're saving. Now, I'm talking about the money over and above after you've paid off all your debt, after you've paid your expenses, and after you've built your preparations, your survival preparations. If there's no money left, well, then nothing goes in those three envelopes. But if you do have some of that money left, divide it up. 50% of it you can spend, 50% or 25% you save, and the other 25% you give. That's making them measurable, and it's making them specific. Now, I'll cover the other three aspects of goal setting in the next episode. But I hope that what you have gained from this program today is a few ideas on shoestring survival, what it means to be a shoestring survivalist. Hopefully, I've given you some ideas that either you can start doing, or maybe some things that you've been forgetting to do. And I've covered a little bit about how to start setting some smart goals that are measurable and specific, and then of course measurable. So thanks again for listening to episode 33. And so with all this, I'm going to go ahead and bring this show to a close. And this is Bob Main, and you've listened to another production of today's survival show, where we help you harness the power of choice. See, having options, and strengthen your resolve. We try to make survival simple here. Hopefully I've done that. Not extreme. We help you thrive today so that you can survive tomorrow. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making